Blog Talk Radio. What?
Yes, good. Assalamu alaikum, everyone. You're listening to Elevated Places again, and I'm going to be your guest host, Student Minister Rodney Muhammad. I thank you all who are listening in. Of course, Elevated Places is the communication arm of a great star in the ministry class of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and our Nation of Islam, our own student minister, Ava Muhammad, the national spokesperson for the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. I miss my sister, and I pray that Allah will always be pleased with the effort that she had made to make her word bond to him so many years. Thank Allah, as we are able to benefit from the documented work of Student Minister Ava Muhammad, notwithstanding the self-improvement study course, the study guide, in which case a study guide is just waiting in the wings after 21 successful study guides have come out, and still we have not plumbed the depths of the knowledge and the wisdom that we are able to extract from these guys. And God knows, if we drink from them alone, we will find ourselves greatly improved. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan recently said of the study guides, we literally could go anywhere on our planet with these. And these would be accepted by any sane people on the planet. Can you imagine that? It's not just what was revealed, because things have been revealed to prophets, particularly for the last 6,000 years. And we have a recorded history that they have even been rejected. But with this revelation that came through the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, it was treated well and fixed and framed by Student Minister Ava Muhammad, and she was able to produce something that's documented, that this man, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, said it could be taken anywhere. That means among any people on the planet, put in their language or tongue to understand the words that are in self-improvement study course alone, it would be received by them. And you know, with the religious dogmas on the planet, with many of the gross misunderstandings, both intentional and unintentional misunderstandings on the planet, it's hard to reach anyone. There's a saying that one of the things that you don't talk about is religion, because it seems that people never get anywhere when they start either discussing, debating, trying to exchange The differences in religion, it seems that the people get nowhere. So they said, don't even talk about it. That's how sensitive and how mind-confusing the subject matter is when we deal with religion. But with self-improvement study course, you would find people who may have an aversion toward discussing religion, having an open mind to receive self-improvement. So this documented work should never be forsaken of student minister Ava Muhammad's hand, taking the words of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and fixing them for our little community here in the wilderness of North America. But yet it's fitting for all the inhabitants of our planet Earth. there are many books and products and things that we'll talk to you about before the close of tonight's show. And, you know, tonight we're going to just discuss some of the history and some of the documented work that we have from the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, mostly through Student Minister Ava Muhammad. Also, we want to look at one document that was done that she did not prepare, and it's called the National Agenda. And in 2000, the 5 years following the Million Man March of 1995, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, of course, commissioned Ben Chavis to go around formation, primarily from members of our civil rights community, other activists, community, nationalist community on the grounds, and combine the work of us all into a document which dealt with public policy issues and more from 2000 to 2008. But if you really go into the work that was put into the book, The National Agenda, you will see that we are still dealing with many of those issues today, and issues like immigration, issues like voting rights, issues that deal with health care and the arguments of health care in this country, so many things that we are looking at that have gone neglected and unaddressed, particularly in the black world. But we find that people of color all over are suffering, particularly in this land. So the national agenda that we'll be talking about tonight in the health section, dealing with quality of life. And one of the things that we will talk about this evening, and we hope you call in so that you can weigh in on the discussion and perhaps give us the benefit of what you have been able to secure in the way of information about what we discussed tonight, and better still, those that are listening can benefit from what you may want to share tonight. Elevated places, the seventh surah of the Holy Quran, just a perfect selection by Minister Ava Muhammad. The elevated place is a surah that always remind me there was war even in heaven. In the high places, warfare had taken place. Disagreement had taken place. Disappointment had taken place at a high level. And when these kinds of emotions that trigger even rebellion and treachery, God has to cast out from the elevated places those that can't maintain their place there because they're in rebellion to his will. the addresses by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, The Will of God, Part 1, The Will of God, Part 2, and The Will of God, Part 3, all played a role in the continuation of the building of the self-improvement study course beyond just the address that he made in Phoenix, Arizona in 1986, which dealt with self-improvement, the basis for community development. And God knows we have community development corporations all throughout America in everybody's city. We got folks that have set up what they call CDCs, and people have set up other nonprofit organizations, and we are working hard in these organizations to just try to repair a great deal of the suffering of people throughout the land. And even as we do that kind of work, and the Quran says, even if it's an atom's weight of good, we pay attention to it. And good takes care of itself, as the Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches. But even as we do all of this, it seems like evil that is going on in the land. And so we need a deeper look into the problem. We need something that takes us far beyond the noted problem areas that you hear on the news every day, which really are outcomes, manifestations, but they don't take us to the root of, or the cause of many of these maladies, social maladies that we see today. And so one of the things that we hope to talk about tonight in the way of stress and in the way of suicide, they are plaguing the country now. And I know that we are talking about a great deal of the murders, the homicides that take place, particularly in our communities, the self-destructive, misguided behavior that leads us to the killing one of the other. And I found that in many of these discussions, suicide is never brought up, but yet we're finding that the stress that we are living under, and God knows we lived under stress and slavery, chattel slavery. We lived under stress and Jim Crow. the horrible we lived under of sharecropping, the pyramid system, the wars and segregation and segregated living, and particularly in the northern cities, these stress levels, which had to be extremely high, never resulted in measurable quantitative outcomes of suicide among us, but yet that's happening today. And so some of the things that I've been able to look at about suicide is that in Black America, suicides are about 2.3 times more likely to be classified as undetermined. I did not know that. And so there may be many of us that are deceased now, and it may have been the result of a suicide, but it wasn't classified as a suicide. The age-adjusted suicide rate just between somewhere between, I think it's, well, in 2020, we have about 7.7 suicides per 100,000 of us. So we could say almost eight people out of every 100,000 Black people are committing suicide. And that's a high, high number for us. When whites die, and they don't clearly see it as a homicide, they don't clearly see it as a natural death, words like depression show up. And you know what, before I go too far into it, my sister Charlene will need to come on, because we need some news round updates. And of course, there's been a prison swap going on between the United States and Russia, and I know that's been all over the news today, and I'm not sure what else we have, but I think we need to take a moment out and get these news reports from Sister Charlene Muhammad. I hope she's with us.
Yes, sir. Assalamu alaikum. How are you doing?
Wa alaikum salam.
Well, thank you for having me, and I mean,
well,
yes, sir.
I thank you. I thank you all for having me, and I'm real anxious to hear the reports and things coming out. I know some things have been going on. I've been reading your articles in the final call.
All pages due to a lie, and I'll be brief. In the name of our in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, I bear witness that there is no God but Allah, and that Muhammad is His servant and messenger. Assalamu alaikum, peace and blessings to everyone tuning in the elevated places. And thank you, Student Minister Rodney, for this installment of In the News on Elevated Places. You touched right on it. I would like to break out and add to what you said about pro WNBA player Brittany Griner is on her way home. This is after a month of being wrongfully detained, according to the U.S., under intolerable circumstances in Russia. This is coming right out of the White House press staff. It is reported that our sister is in good health and that she is being offered a wide range of support options, and she was released in a one-for-one prisoner swap for international arms dealer Victor Bout, as you mentioned. And also in the Final Call newspaper, our own cover headlines this week, Africa must unite, rise up, and be aware of smart, crooked deceivers. This cover story, Out the Ballpark Again, by Brother Brian Muhammad, and he does a great job detailing how the upcoming United States-Africa Leaders Summit, hosted by President Joe Biden in Washington, D.C., raises questions, and Brother Student Minister Rodney, it raises concerns about U.S. intentions and plans on the continent. According to organizers, the three-day summit is scheduled for December 13th through the 15th, and it is expected to convene African presidents, civil society, diaspora communities across the United States, and the private sector. They're in the pursuit of a shared vision, future of U.S.-Africa relations. Brother Brian writes that America courting the leaders comes amid a great power competition of foreign nations who are vying for influence and control of Africa's vast resources. The summit also comes while Africa suffers crises of, look, food insecurity, there's climate effects, conflicts, exploitation, and the domino effect of Western world decline and turmoil, and might I add, vaccinations. Okay, so Professor of African American Studies and Religious Studies at the University of South Carolina, Dr. Henry Singleton, said that it's been a tenuous relationship. It's been a relationship, he quotes, of superior European men and so-called inferior African people, particularly West African people, which justified the economic pillage of the most minerally rich continent in the world, says Dr. Singleton. I encourage Student Minister Rodney to read and study the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan's, in addition to the cover, the related center-page article entitled Africa Must Rise and Be Free. And in addition to that, Demetric, Student Minister Demetric Muhammad's article, our author out of Muhammad Moslem of 55 and student minister there, who also has the book on Smiting the Shepherd. He has an article, Jewish Leaders' Fear of Farrakhan, and Brother Jackie Muhammad has an article, Memo to Adam Milstein, a strong defense of attacks against Minister Farrakhan. So I would like to conclude by saying with that, there's a related story of the firing of a young black single mother in Los Angeles, California, and it has led to a campaign against anti-blackness here. And this is about Passion Schoolfield. She was fired from her job by Restaurant Depot. Jetro, this is a cash and carry food supplier in Los Angeles. And all she did was, as she was ringing up a customer, they were having a casual conversation, and they were talking about celebrities that they like. They mentioned in the conversation, it was mentioned Cat Williams, entertainer, comedian, and also Ye, formerly known as Kanye West. And our sister said, I like Ye. He keeps it real. Well, she was fired. A white male complained, and she was suspended that day, and she was fired. And so our Nation of Islam's own student regional Western Regional Representative Abdul Malik Saeed is part of a coalition of pastors who have gathered the community, and they've been fighting for justice for her under the newly formed Grassroots Coalition Against Anti-Blackness. Sister Passion has been given her job back in terms of offered it back. She's not going to take that there if what I'm understanding is correct, but she's been offered the job back, and at least four other companies who have gotten wind of this have offered her job, and some of them have been Black-owned entrepreneurs. And so for more development on, as Brother Malik calls it, this Rosa Parks moment, you can find more information at hashtag Stand With Passion or at GCCAA for more information. It's really groundbreaking, so please read and share the Final Call newspaper. Subscribe to digitalfinalcall.com. And again, thank you, Student Minister Rodney, for your patience with this in the news report.
Thank you,
producer. Yeah, thank you, Sister Donna Muhammad. And to our executive producer, Brother Darius Muhammad, thank you so much for allowing In the News on Elevated Places. And I'm Sister Charlene Muhammad. And don't forget, stand with passion. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. Thank you so much. I was blessed to see the press conference some time back before it came out in the Final Call newspaper about Sister Passion there in Los Angeles. So this is going to be something. I know this isn't over with yet, as they have been meeting at the White House there'll probably be other forums where they try to really put a dragnet out against everyone who would even raise their voice to critique anything coming from certain communities. So thanks be to that coalition out there. And I pray that that coalition can help with other injustices that are going on out there. Well, back to our subject, you know, we are so thankful for the opportunity to be on tonight. And I was going into the deaths of whites that they find. And when they don't find that it's clearly a homicide, when they don't find that it's a natural cause of death, they use terms like depression. They use terms like anxiety. But if someone is deceased already, you can't see depression, you can't see anxiety, but they want to use these terms, find other things. It's likely that the cause of death will be suicide, especially if something was done to the person, but they cannot see clearly that it was done by someone else. But when blacks die, they don't use words like depression. When blacks are dead, they don't use words like anxiety when it's clear that it wasn't a homicide, when it's clear that it wasn't natural causes. Look at the words they use. Questionable. Cause of death. Questionable. Cause of death. No further detail. So when you go to get a document that says that the coroner has out, and you're looking for a cause of death, and you see questionable, you see no further details. If it was a suicide, it'll never get listed as one. So our own black psychologists and others, they're beginning to say that the suicide rate among black people is far greater than what we're reading in some of the small numbers that we have. From 2003 to 2017, they cite 1,810 suicides, but the black psychologists and black psychiatrists and others that are involved in these kind of studies, they're saying that this is grossly out of step with what the reality is. And they're saying that it's far more drastic than the figures I just read to you. I think it's something that we have to pay attention to. I know I have not paid a great deal of attention to those that are saying that mental health is growing in our communities, but the stresses and the causes of mental health, I don't think we're really addressing what the real causes are. And as Sister Ava would probably say, it's black people living in a white, particularly racist society. When you're not made by nature to fit in another man's or woman's formula, that alone can bring a great level of stress on you. And look, the world that we live in is so contrary to the cosmic reality, as the Honorable Elijah Muhammad taught us, except you be in harmony with the God of the originator of the universe and the master of it now. And unless we are following those laws that govern the universe and the cosmic reality that we live in, I mean, Earth is a planet inside of a larger, far larger scheme. Important, nevertheless, but it's not the only thing here. Well, if we're not living according to those laws and that, then we're out of step with God, and so we're in stress. The Holy Quran says, and Allah created his creation, but with truth. And to live outside of truth automatically brings a great level of stress to the human being. And stress brings about an undetermined response to a demand that's made on the body. So it can start in the mind, but ultimately the demand is placed on the body. And somewhere we start experiencing from the body that which originated in the mind. And so living in a racist society and living in a society that is determined that you will never maximize your life, you will never live to see your own self-worth, you know, in a genuine, wholesome way as a community. If you do something spectacular, if you do something remarkable and notable in life, but when we point back to your people are a listed societal failure and a drag on civilization. And so we're going to treat you a little bit different than we treat the rest of your people, because you're an exception, and you're going to make some money, and you're going to live a better lifestyle and everything. And we're going to set you above and apart. You're not going to put yourself there. We're going to set you there. And sometimes you'll see that the folks that are there are under more stress than the rest of us that are left back in what we call the hood. but these levels of stress lead us to, for our lives to be snuffed out prematurely. And all suicide may not look like suicide, because you can just set your life on a destructive path by deviating from the very laws that govern the nature that you and I created in it. If we are unaware of what that nature is, we don't even know how to live in accord with it. So I noticed that these articles that I get from certain newsletters, they deal with investments. They deal with companies all over the planet and that. But look what they just sent me, that burnout is worldwide. And they're saying burnout, if the work environment doesn't make drastic changes for the employees, the labor pools that they hold, many of these people are going to fall into more and more, a term that came up, I first saw it in the University of Pennsylvania, learned helplessness, T-U, and you're learning from their teaching how to be helpless. Once we become helpless, there's no way black people can ever live shouldering themselves with a spirit and mind of self-determination, because now everything that has happened to them, everything that is happening to them, everything that will happen to them is someone else's fault, and I have no control over it. And so because I have no control over it, I just have to sit back and take it. So the scripture says in the book of Genesis, Abraham, know of a surety that thy seed will be in bondage in a strange land among a strange people. And in that land, and they will do this for 400 years, but in that land where they are afflicted and suffered. Now I'm going to the word afflicted, because if you're in a fight, even if someone gets the better of you in that fight, the marks, bruises, the cuts, the wounds that you bring back from the fight, we look at those as bruises, as wounds that you incurred with you putting up every effort to defend yourself and make a good accounting of yourself. But when you're afflicted, you're literally tied up and you can't do anything to defend yourself, because you're rendered, as the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, you're rendered handicapped, blind, deaf, and dumb from the beginning. So when you're in a state like that, he said, you're handicapped and you're almost beyond repair when a fight like that. You're compromised before the fight starts over. So every blow you take is not a blow you took as a result of defending yourself. You're afflicted. I'm afflicted. We're tied up. We're made helpless in that regard. I believe that's why the Holy Quran calls our enemy an open enemy, because his acts that qualify him as an enemy to us, he does them all in the open. And he can do them in the open because we're blind. I know I went on a little bit there, but I needed to get this out because I want us to start drawing a real picture of the kind of stress we live in on a daily basis. Children between the ages of 5 years old and 12 years old are twice as likely to die from suicide than white children. Now you try to ask yourself, there's enough pain and there's enough suffering in this world present that would make someone 5 or 6 years old or 7 years old think about killing themselves. And this is really going on now. They're twice as likely. This is happening with all children. But with black children between the ages of 5 years old and 12 years old from suicide, black girls are two times higher than black boys in the number of suicides. So when I've read those suicide numbers off to you, most of them are black girls. Now you say to yourself, how are girls being treated if they no longer want to live? What's happening to them? Recently, they were talking about one of the the media streams, that the platforms that people use. It was either Facebook or Instagram, but they were dealing with bullying in cyberspace. And many of these young girls, when they're bullied in cyberspace, they feel pretty bad. These people beat them up pretty bad in cyberspace. And they found that in many cases, they have killed themselves. And so they're going after these setups like Facebook and Instagram for allowing these kinds of communications to go on that are leading these young women, boys and black girls. I can remember in 1942, the psychologist Kenneth Clark and his wife Mamie Clark set up an experiment with black girls. And Thurgood Marshall, when he was fighting the case against segregation in Topeka, Kansas public school system in 1954, Thurgood Marshall argued in the Supreme Court against segregation in that school. And what a lot of people don't realize, he had been fighting about segregation for 20 years. So this was a case he was preparing himself for, and he wanted to fight it at the high court level. This was a very sharp attorney, Thurgood Marshall, and that he used to convince the justices of the harm that segregated living did to black people was Dr. Kenneth and Mamie Clark's experiment, where they took the white dolls and the black dolls, and they had black girls come up to take the doll that they would want and reject the one that they didn't want. And to the girl, not one black girl would take a doll that looked like them in color or hue. They all rejected the black dolls and selected the white doll over the black doll. And he was showing that the hatred of self is the psychological, emotional scars that come from living with the kind of stress I've just been talking to you about, trying to measure up to someone that doesn't like you, trying to measure up to someone that doesn't love you, trying to measure up to someone who could never like you or love you, no matter what you do. And God knows we have done everything, but the harm that it really does to you and does to me when you try to measure up to someone else and you don't see your value unless they can see it, is that you start then not to love yourself and like yourself. And pretty soon you hate yourself for not measuring up. You hate yourself for not being what you think you should be, which means something that can win their approval. This is a dangerous way to live, because now, even if you don't just do something specifically in a drastic way to take your own life, you just might set your life on a destructive course. And when it's set on a destructive course, of course, it's just like suicide. So these are some of the things. Now, I got about four things. There's several factors that they feel are contributing to the high levels of suicide today, because among people of color, and blacks are the highest, most of our suicide deaths are between now the ages of 25 and 34 years old, most of them. So we're reaching all the way back to 5 years old, and then we're finding young adults. These are many black children who have just become adults at 25. You're probably just coming out of college. Life hasn't even really started yet at 34 years old, but yet between 25 years old and 34 years of age, a lot of black folks are killing themselves. One of the things that we found, and the Reverend Jesse Jackson's daughter, Santita Jackson, used to have a talk show, and it was dealing with this, was suicide among Christian pastors. Once a month, there was a pastor who committed suicide. But if you Google it, you'll find out that the Christian pastors that are committing suicide are not all black. So life, even in the church, has found its level of stress in the pulpit. And so you have at least one per month, but there are even more attempts than they are those that have successfully taken their own life. Look at one of the things that they think is happening to black young adults between the ages of 25 and 34. Trauma and discrimination. This is what some of the black psychiatrists strongly believe is a contributor to the kind of stress that's leading many to feel like failures, to feel like they have no sense of self-worth, and it makes them easier candidates for suicide. It cited the death of Trayvon Martin. It cited the death of Michael Brown, Tamir Rice, and others, and starting to feel valueless. Black teachers have been, and some of the organizations, they have been talking for a long time to public school administration about having what they call trauma-based education. We go into classrooms. Classroom may have 25, 30 children in it. You just ask the children, how many of you all heard gunshots in your neighborhood? And almost all the hands go up. How many have ever seen someone shot, wounded? There's not a classroom generally in an entirely black area that you can go in and not at least one hand goes up that they have watched someone get shot. and many times we go on after the drama goes down, after the ambulances are gone, after the reporters are gone, after all the police have disappeared into the night. But what's left is the trauma. The trauma on those who lived and had to watch some of these horrific scenes take place right in the spaces where they live. And these are children. And we expect them to go back to school the next day, pick up their math, pick up their science, pick up their English courses, and just keep doing the work and doing the best that they can. Well, no one told these children, you know, we're in a state of war. No one told these children we can expect that some won't make it. Nobody has prepared these children for what they're seeing, yet they're seeing it, and the trauma is there. And without an educational experience prepared for these children to take into consideration, factor in the stresses that these children go through, we're just running a bunch of numbers down to them. We're putting a bunch of books in front of them and everything. But what's really going on inside that child has not been addressed. And until it's addressed, I dare say we don't really have that child's attention. So trauma and discrimination is one of the things. Another barrier is the stigma. When people are troubled, they found, and they want to take their life, if there was someone that they really could talk to, a lot could be saved as a result of that. But because there's a stigma on you having emotional problems, or you having psychological problems, or you're plagued with a way of thinking that may be destructive, and you don't want to go to a professional's office and feel like, God, I done went crazy, and so I don't need to be in here. I can't talk to so-and-so, because the stigma's on me, and they just say, oh, man, get yourself together. You know, ain't nothing wrong with you, you know, because the last thing we want to say is, you know, baby brother, Pookie, or whatever we're calling them, they have some psychological problems. Maybe we need to talk to them. When these kind of things happen, when people have, especially when there's a suicide, they start questioning people who've been around them. When's the last time you talked to them? You didn't notice anything? Has she been acting strange? Or anything like that? Have you noticed anything that was different in them or something? Did they seem moody, melancholy? You know, they start asking you all kind of questions to see, have you really been observing? And most times in the rush of our lives, the demands that we're moving around and everything, and we probably get a lot less time to sit and think and reflect ourselves. I'm telling you, folks, we're not living normal. And anybody that's telling you, no, we got to be up and going and get up and go all the time, I don't believe that's normal. I don't believe that the way God created us. You know, imagine a God who creates you and you can only stay up so long. Pretty soon you'll start yawning and you just, even if you don't want to fall asleep, the brain will shut down. They say, okay, we've had enough. And so we're gonna shut down now. And pretty soon, he said, if you want to stay up beyond so many hours, I'll just turn a movie on for you. And that's called hallucinations. Social stigmas, and you don't want nobody around talking about you like you might have gone crazy or something's wrong with you, but you don't talk about it, especially men. You don't talk about it. And so no family will know, no close friend will know, no teacher will know, and that you don't want to talk to any professionals, but there's no one you feel close enough to when it comes to those kind of things. Another thing that they're finding in young black males in particular with suicide, in addition to being non-expressive, is attention deficit disorder. And, you know, when their feelings of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan reminds us, plays a big role in the murders that take place today in our city. So death is all around us. There's no question about it. And really beginning to address it, you almost feel overwhelmed when you just look at it and catalog all the problems, just the top 10 killers of black people when we talk about our health and our quality of life. We didn't even get to the minister once telling us that 50% of the black community has high blood pressure. 50% of us. That's a silent killer. Cancer is here. One-third of us, cancer in our lifetime now. I mean, God knows homicides is in the top 10, but we have so many things that we are plagued from that our bodies have a demand put on them from stresses that originate even in the mind. So to get completely healthy, of course we have How to Eat to Live, and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad says fasting will go after 90% of the things that have plagued our flesh. Fasting. Just stop eating and disciplining ourselves, and you'll find that our real power, and I'm always saying this to our people in the community, we have power, we're just not using it. Our power is in our ability to control ourselves. And one of the great things about How to Eat to Live as a discipline, it teaches you how to say no. And it teaches you how to give yourself a command and be able to follow up on it. We're a few days from the end of this year, which would be December 31st. And what a lot of Americans are going to do, they're going to make some kind of commitment to themselves that after the 31st, when they get into January 1st, 2023, they're going to live another way. They're going to do something. They're going to reset. They're going to rededicate, or they're going to change something. And it usually ends up with, I'm going to start doing this, or usually starts off, I'm going to stop doing this. And sometimes it's a combination of both. And we try to get started on January 1st. By January 31st, they said definitely by the end of February, most of us have abandoned these declarations, if you will. And what does that prove? that we have a hard time giving ourselves a command and then being able to follow through on it, being able to just obey ourselves, our better selves that tell us we're going to stop doing this, we're going to start doing this, I'm going to end up like this and that, and we just can't seem to pull it off because of that absence of discipline. How to eat to live, just teaching us how to say no to our stomach is a powerful concept. And when you think about it, just being able to do that at once every 24 hours, and I remember the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan saying, once you have mastered one meal a day, then go to one meal every other day. And when you have mastered that, then go to one meal every 3 days. And when you master that, stay there for the rest of your life. Wow. I said, boy, that's a tall order. That looks a long way from where I am right now at the one meal a day. But he's letting us know it can be done. And I know there are all kinds of occasions where people are doing things socially that involve food, that involve people being out somewhere doing something where food is involved. And certainly a person says, I look like an oddball sitting up at a lot of different events. And every time people see me, I'm fasting because it's not a day that I, these are just some of the things that we can do. And I think there's a real feeling, a real sense of empowerment when you successfully give yourself a command and you're able to follow through on it. I mean, that's a great, great feeling. And I think for those that are in the Nation of Islam, you have to admit, when you first followed the instruction of eat one meal a day, I know you felt powerful. The fact that you got through that day, and God help you, when you fasted 3 days and you actually made it and saw that you could make it and you didn't eat any food and you're still alive. And I mean, it destroys myths. It gives you a sense of empowerment. You know, you're not riding in the back seat, just eating and partaking of food and drink all the time. You got up behind the steering wheel of your life, and you're determining when you're going to do these things, and you're determining when you're not going to do them, and you find out just how powerful your mind really is, and your will to do His will when you read that book, How to Eat to Live. So I know I've rambled on, but you know, I think we get the picture about a quality of life, you know, and we're losing a grip on it as a people, and suicide is haunting us. Suicide is haunting us as a people, and I know that historically there were times when we lived under great, I mean, real great cruelties. I mean, we faced them every day, particularly in the South before the great migrations took place. And that I know that we worked hard. Some of us lived our whole life on a plantation. Some of us lived our life and never owned a pair of shoes. We walked barefooted most of our life. We might have found an old pair of shoes that had belonged to somebody else, and they were worn out for them, and we had to make that a shoe for ourselves. Some of the shoes were too small, so we cut part of it out so our toes could stick out because it was just too unbearable to try to wear them. We lived under these kind of conditions where we never owned, a black woman never owned a pretty dress for herself. She never had a chance once in her life, just nice. And now we have these opportunities and everything, we're taking our own lives. And that number of those of us that are taking our own lives is growing. And so I'm really trying to set the stage for the callers who may want to call in, you know, to weigh, because this is spreading. This is not talked about every morning. I know in Philadelphia, they want to tell us who got killed last night in there, but they're not going to report who killed themselves last night. So the suicide numbers are not being given to us. The homicides are. And so we tend to respond to what's being put in front of us most of the time. So they know if they keep putting that in front of us, they're going to generate a response. And pretty soon, you know, the outrage and the cries, we got to do something. They create some social hysteria. And I'm certainly not trying to minimize, you know, these homicides and things like that. But it doesn't sound like we're really thinking. And, of course, I'm just reminded that in, I believe it was 1979, a friend of mine called me up and he said, man, there's a guy who used to be with Malcolm X. I said, really? In the night. And I said, oh, is that right? He said, yeah. And we, you know, you want to go? I was thinking about going to that meeting. I said, yeah. So I took a shower and we got there in Chicago and we were in a gymnasium at the Martin Luther King High School. And Lou Palmer and Dr. Charles Knox and Hakeem Olabudi was there. And I think Olamenji was there and Dr. Jake Carruthers and others in Chicago. But I can remember, you know, and the keynote speaker was Minister Louis Farrakhan. I had never heard this man before, but, you know, in hearing him talk that night, I was gravitated toward him as I kept coming to buy books and things, you know, I could see that this was someone who was really serious about our health, and I meant our mental state of mind. The subject was the ultimate challenge, I think, the survival of the Black nation. And I think I still had that tape somewhere. It's pretty old. They probably, you know, they're using different devices now to play the lectures, but he was the only voice was really talking about in our neighborhoods. He was the only voice. I mean, everyone's talking about it now. My problem is everybody's talking about it, but nobody's talking about him, who was so consistent with this issue of self-hatred, self-destruction, us killing one another, that it ultimately led to Stop the Killing Tour, All Men's Meeting, to the Million Man March, the Million Family March, and that's where we had the document put together, so we would have a follow up, not just for the members of the Nation of Islam, but a follow up for the Black community, something that the Black community could embrace, and that it was a document that the Black community, meaning their organizational heads, had some part in putting together, because this was compiled. And then, of course, it's crowned with the unequaled wisdom of God through the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and now the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. And so as a document to work with, it has foresight in it, because you can find some of the things that are on the front burner today in the news. They're in the national agenda. We were talking about it in 1999 going into 2000 for the Million Family March in Washington, D.C. If you look at things that they're talking about, immigration, if you look at things that they're talking about, voting rights, if you look at the things that they're talking about in terms of the homelessness and the real failures of schools as an institution in the land, you'll see that all of it's in the national agenda. All of it. The prison system in there. You don't have anything that anyone is talking about out here today that's not in that book. So there's foresight in that book. There's great wisdom that's needed to cast enough light on the darkness of the present world and the problems that it presents for human beings to help us to begin to climb our way out of what we are in. I think that the least informed black person has figured out nobody is really coming to help us. If we're sick, we're going to have to come up with a real doctor. Among us, we're gonna have to fix those injustices ourselves, because too often the people we call for are behind many of the injustices that come upon you and I. So, we want us to think tonight you're on a show called Elevated Places, and our own student minister, Ava Muhammad, she gave great and careful thought to many of the things that went on. I can remember years ago when she used to keep the Final Call building packed. She was dealing with conditioning and conditioned responses. I can remember years later in Atlanta, Georgia, when she dealt with meltdown, all dealing with the mind and these mental states. And, these folks have spent billions of dollars, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said, on mind control. So when you think about at that monastery, the Austrian monk, what was his name, Mendel? It'll come to me. But anyway, Pavlov, and he did the experiment with the dog and the bell, and he could actually end up associating feeding with a bell. And when the dog would hear the bell, he would salivate because it was time for feeding, and then the dog would feed, and they'd ring the bell, and the dog would feed, and ring the bell, and the dog would feed. Finally, they just start ringing the bell, and they put the empty pan out there, but the dog would still salivate as if he had gone to feed, but all they did was ring his bell. And they've trained us like that. Conditioning produces a conditioned response. And isn't it amazing that the revelation of the Holy Quran, Allah says, surely Allah changes not the condition of a people till they first change it themselves. The conditions around us will change when we change on the inside, when we change our minds, when we change our minds and come out of a state of learned helplessness, which is burning us out, come out of a state of dependency and shoulder ourselves with a mind, a self-determined mind. And the spirit of self-determination, and the minister said, you can't live a self-determined existence if the mind is at war with the body. The mind wants to get better, and the body won't let you get better. The body wants to keep doing what it wants to do, and the mind is caving in to the body when the mind should have the steering wheel, not the body. So bringing ourselves under control, self-improvement, it becomes the real basis for the community development. And I hope you guys call in tonight, because I know people have things to say about the overall emotional state that black people are in, when we see the news and we see different things that people are going through, it's I call it the misery index. And there's a reason that we find ourselves only on that. You know, and I want you all to remember that the you can purchase books of Sister Ava Muhammad and the master classes and continued studies with our beloved sister. And when you go to MinisterAva.com, MinisterAva.com, I believe you can find just about everything you need to know about securing products and things, because as I said, as we've learned about the stars in the heavens, you know, and I didn't know that till I came in the nation, that when I looked up in the sky and saw stars, that in most cases, those are not stars that I see. Those are light that have been cast from stars that have been gone millions of light years away. But light traveling at 186,000 miles per second, it presents itself in the sky. And so these lights that you see when you go to this website, MinisterAva.com, you're going to see light traveling. This is light empowering subject matter that you can get from the books, the master classes, and any and all of the continued studies of Student Minister Ava Muhammad. I'm Student Minister Rodney Muhammad here in the city of Philadelphia and the Delaware Valley. And I'm the guest host tonight to be with you for Elevated Places. I'm so happy to be here to be a part of the Ava Muhammad and that dedicated crew that she had working with her. If you'd like to call in, I don't know if I'm supposed to give the call-in number, but I'll do it if I think, I thought I had it. Oh, yes. So you can call in at 563-999-3065. That's area code 563-999-3065. And, you know, you just press 1 to enter. But if you'd like to call in, that's the number, 563 area code, and it's 999-3065. You're listening to Elevated Places, and I'm guest host, Student Minister Rodney Muhammad, filling in as a guest host for the continued programming of Elevated Places by Student Minister Ava Muhammad. We have so many other stats, and God, I just didn't want to make you depressed tonight reading all of these things, because for everything that I talked about tonight, there is a solution. And I reiterate the words of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, that the knowledge to get us out of what we are in today is present. We do not have to experience things at the levels and widespread epidemic type of ways that we're experiencing things. We do not have to go through this. We possess so much power, and we're sitting with it. You know, it almost reminds me of the little cute story, The Wizard of Oz, and she's coming down the yellow brick road, and you know, there's a scarecrow, and he wants a brain, and I mean, he's pointing in different directions. She's saying, which way do I go? He's at a fork in the road. And don't we reach places like that in our lifetime, where there's a fork in the road, you're just not sure which way to go, and he was pointing in both ways at the same time. And she looked at him and said, why don't you make up your mind? And the scarecrow had to say something like this: that's just it. I lost my mind. See? And so the Bible says a double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. you get to the tin man and he don't have a heart, a real heart, you know, reminds you of living on the streets. You just turn cold. Pretty soon you lose any real feeling for anyone. Maybe you don't live on the street and you turn like that. The Bible talks about hearts waxing cold. Then there's a lion who's just afraid of everyone. He lives under fear. That's a four-letter word, F-E-A-R, false evidence appearing real. But what was interesting, they thought somebody else could give them a brain, give them a heart of love, and give them courage. They thought that. And, you know, it sounds so much like our story. A mind unfed, you don't know who you are. You don't know who you are. But if you don't know yourself, you don't have a heart to love yourself. And if you don't have a heart to love yourself, because it's only love that casts out fear, you think you're afraid of a lot of things. But let someone that you're afraid of or something that you're afraid of, safety and the life of someone that you do love, and you'll find that because of that love, whatever fear you have will disappear. It'll come, jump right out of you, and you'll find yourself a different person to protect someone that you love, even if what normally you would have been afraid of coming after them, or it just won't be there because of that love. So you almost could see that it was, you know, three different creatures and a girl in the Wizard of Oz, but you could see our story in there. But when they get to the wizard ultimately has to admit, I don't have the power to give you all these kinds of things. I think he told one of them, you know, you're really not afraid, or you're really not dumb. You're just a victim of disorganized thinking, you know. And the wizard tries to show them that, or at least the story does, that much of what they did, they already had what they were looking for. They just ain't never been in a course that helped them to first witness their own powers and then to fulfill them. So we need that kind of yellow brick road of self-development, yellow brick road of self-improvement, and we'll find that becomes the basis of the real community development, man. We've got so much good going on for us as a people, and I'm so thankful to Almighty God Allah for the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, because he just did not give up on us. And because of that, if we availed ourselves to him, we can see how blessed we are. And I know people think that's just a cliche to say, you know, we're thankful for him and we're blessed by him. But if you really give it some thought, of where you could be. And sometimes you don't have to far that deep, because you can just look out here and see where people are that have not availed themselves to him and not availed themselves to this unequaled wisdom of God coming from the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And now with his representative and him representing this truth and life-giving message to us. And even if you're not living it to the better of what you know you can do, you know what you have done, you have seen a difference. And that gives you some kind of indication of how much better off you could be, gave yourself to this in a way that no one could separate you from it or come between you and it. Between you and God. Man, that's powerful living. That's powerful living, and it's healthy living. And when someone tells you to do something, follow something, perform something, and you do, follow, and perform, and you see the difference, then to me they've made their case. But do, follow, and perform, and nothing happens, maybe you could make a case. Well, look, I've tried this, this, and this. But, you know, you have, your heart got to be in the right place. A woman said once at Honorable Elijah Muhammad that she had followed what he talked about in his book. But the mindset wasn't right. And so this was giving her, and, you know, I found out years later through quantum physics that, you know, thoughts, bad thoughts degrade the body. Can't just sit up and be negative. You can have some of the best material to feed your mind with, but if you determine that the dominant thoughts of your mind are going to continually be to feed on what's negative, well then, you know, it's like I read where someone says, well, if the laws are universal, in this cosmic reality that I talked about when the show started, and a person won't go to a church, won't go to a mosque, won't join a religious community, but is willing to follow certain laws that are in our universe, and then you go to a church and you go to a mosque and that, but you're not following the laws that are in our, you can't blame God for blessing the sinner and leaving you unblessed or me unblessed. Where we sitting up in the house, people can sit in a hospital all day long, but if they never take the treatment, you know, you have to sign a consent form. If you tongue the medication, and then the nurse says, well, I gave them medication, they should have got better. But find out you've been tonguing it and throwing it away, flushing it down the toilet or the sink or something. All you can say is, you know, I was in that hospital for a week. Yeah, but you don't look like it. You don't sound like it. What did they do for you when you were in the hospital? Well, they gave me this, that, and the other, but then only to find out you didn't take it. And if you didn't take it, then you were just in the house. So we can't just be in the house and then not partake of what's in the house, because if we partake of what is in the house, when we come out of the house, you'll find other people wanting to go in that house. Because your and my condition will look so phenomenally better than it was before we walked in. So let's say all praise is due to Allah for the material that we have, because none of us, and I believe, you know, I'm always looking at books and looking for material and everything, but I know that just looking at other things out here, they're alluring, they're attractive, and people make some good points and things like that. But nothing equals what we have here if it's taken serious. And what could happen to us, not only as one individual, because we're not trying to make one superstar here. We're trying to build, you know, they show this world now of Wakanda. The black folks that are hiding in plain sight, but you see they're supposed to be in this peaceful, black loving civilization where they all can be together and there's harmony, and I guess there's no police around, you know, there's no crime or anything like that. That can only happen if we really change our way of thinking. And when our way of thinking is changed, as the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is a completely changed man in our midst. No matter where he goes, he carries a certain fear with him that he functions out of. You know, he doesn't let anybody create the kind of day he's going to have. And I saw somebody had it was something written, but it showed about 86,400 like dollars. So they said if you had $86,400 and somebody stole $10 from you, now you may be irritated about this $10. You may even want to pursue this act of theft. But you spend the $86,400 to chase this $10? Or would you probably say, you know what, I just ain't going to let it happen again, move on with your life and take the $86,390 that you got left and keep going? And most people would say, no, I'll just take the $86,390 and I'm going to keep on moving. Well, it turns out 86,400 is how many seconds you have in a day. And if somebody took 10 seconds of that and tried to disrupt your day with 10 seconds, is it worth giving up all the other seconds of your 24-hour period, you know, to chase down that rabbit hole, to try to get after that 10 seconds of disruption? Or say, you know what, I'm going to move on with the other seconds I have. Because that 24-hour, if you don't use it, if I don't use it wisely, it's gone. I can't say, well, I messed up today, I didn't get nothing done, let me save some of these hours and put them over in tomorrow. Tomorrow I have 48 hours to deal with. No, if you don't use this 26, it's gone. Start with a new bank account of time tomorrow at 24 hours. So they're just a tremendous amount of lessons we can learn, and they're very simple. And then we just have to want change bad enough. And that's what Allah is saying. I will change not the condition of a people. Surely I will change not the condition of a people till they first change it themselves. I got to know you want change. And if you want change, you'll produce change around you. Your environment will change because you will live like a thermostat, not a thermometer. And you get up every day trying to read the temperature and what's going on out there. But when you're a thermometer, you ain't concerned with what the temperature is, because you're going to turn the heat up or down, whatever you want, because you're controlling your own life. You're living a self-determined existence. You've decided not to live a stress-filled existence where you got anxiety because you're always worried about what somebody else is deciding about your life. But if you're making your own decisions, you ain't got no room for the kind of anxiety that we live under now. And depression is a state of ingratitude. That means we really don't know God. We really don't know how he's blessed us. Realize the grace that he has in our midst in a man like the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. And by not having these things planted deep in our mind and our soul and spirit, we end up depressed because we don't feel we have anything to be grateful for. I've never seen a person that's depressed that's grateful. Generally, a depressed individual is somebody who feels, I don't have anything, I've lost anything to be grateful for. But when you come into a state of gratitude and you're really grateful for things that you have, you know, and some people feel ungrateful until they see somebody visibly in a far worse state than they're in. And it kind of pricks their mind, and they think about it, and they say, boy, you know, some of these folks are not well off. So we got about, I think we have two callers on the line. So if we can get them on, I'm not sure how they come on, but if we can, are they able to come on, Sister Donna, the pause that we have? Yes.
We have
good evening.
Brother Darryl on the line from Florida.
Brother Darryl on the line? Yes.
Assalamu alaikum, family.
Wa alaikum salam.
Happy Savior's Day, beloved.
Happy Savior's Day to you, beloved.
Yes, sir. I was sitting back enjoying hearing what you were saying, and you pricking a lot of what the messenger and the minister has been teaching us and how to eat to live. And you are 100% correct. If we sit back and don't follow how to eat to live, we will be ungrateful and, you know, don't have gratitude of what Allah has blessed us with. And I know for a fact that I have not been 100% on how to live, but I could feel the blessings. I've been blind now about 9 years. I had a bad surgery 2013, 28 days before my birthday, May the 30th. And I have set back, and I have a home care lady that comes to help me out. And she couldn't believe that I'm 68. And I said, well, how old you think I am? She said, well, you really look like you're about 50. I said, praise be to Allah. Mm. So that lets you know that these teachers, and she's 51.
Wow.
And she said, you 68? I said, yes, ma'am. I said, if I follow how to eat to live 100%, I would go back to the age of 16 in a minute. And so she's now studying how to eat to live. She's diabetic.
Oh, man.
She also been saying she took the shot. And that's one thing I wondered if anyone could help out on that. I know Sister Ava spoke about a lot of our family, even the believers, took the shot out of fear. Should we now run from our family or our people that have taken the shot or not in the mean with them, or we just pray and help them
so.
To? Okay, and I was telling
her, and I haven't really heard that we would have to take those kind of measures, but, and I don't know all of the fallout that come as a result of many of those who have taken the shot. They've proven one thing for sure, that the shots alone didn't stop folk from getting COVID. They first tried to criticize the people who didn't take the shot. And they said, many of us, this became a disease pretty much now of the unvaccinated. And they were charging those of us who didn't get vaccinated with being the cause of continual hospital days and subsequent fatalities. But now the people, it's clear the shot are not free of COVID. And in some ways they're trying to admit it to them. Then they're telling them to get a booster shot and then get another booster shot. And pretty soon, you know, even the person who has been most loyal to their instructions are going to begin to question them. You know, on this, but
yeah.
I don't think we have, and I think that if we needed to really be away from family and those close to us, because they have been vaccinated, I think it would have been shared with us by now that we should do so. So no,
yes,
you know, many of us have family that are helping us in many ways, and that, and I wouldn't want someone to shun the help that we may have in our lives. You know,
yes, I have told her also. I said, you know, I had heard when it first started, even when it first got worse after we came back from Savior's Day back in 2019, that our people would be like super spreaders of that by taking it. And I said, well, I have, and it hurts me to know that my firstborn, she feared and took the vaccine and the booster and did it with my two granddaughters. And I pray a lot, you know, and I said, you know better. Yeah, daddy, but I got scared. And the minister said, even the believers, some of them got scared. But I said, well, you know, it's a blessing that we have a treatment out here. So I was telling the sister, just get on board. Dr. Eileen, and that's the show come on every Tuesday, and I ordered some ivermectin. I had the COVID twice. Praise be to Allah that I took the ivermectin. I bounced back within 24 hours. Even the minister said, him and mother, our beloved sister, his wife, Khadijah, when they was on the plane flying, and they both cried, said, here I am, the man of God, mm-hmm. and I got it. But see, Allah is not stricken in none of us, but he wants us to trust in him. And he said they took
right.
the ivermectin and what, and they bounced back. So I told her, I said, sister, even though you are maybe intimate with your husband or whatever, I said, I'm not sure, but I said, it's a show. Come on. I don't think it could be spread, but you could start to take an ivermectin. But I have been around a lot of family and friends, and like sister said, we're going to be around people that has the shot. We just have to protect ourselves. So I said, well, just get on the show and just start listening and take what we have out here from the nation. But right quick, it was, I don't know if anybody could elaborate on it. Last week, I heard on the radio or the news that they said it was a bright light shot through the sky. And they said it looked like a thousand years light time or something. That But they didn't speak on it long enough. And I wonder if anybody was familiar with that bright light that shot through the sky about a week ago. Shalom Aleichem. I love you all. Stay safe. And happy Savior's
Thank
Day.
Thank you. Thank you, Brother Darryl. Happy Savior's Day to you. Wa alaikum salam. Oh, man. Well, first of all, I'll start with the last part. I didn't hear about the bright light guy, but I'm always hearing about something. And I think we need to funnel all that information to Brother Ilya Rashad there in Memphis. Certainly he either knows about it or he'll be glad to know about it if he doesn't, so he can help us make sense as we try to trace the patterns of these vessels in the sky. And Brother Darryl, I hope all of the care that you're getting, that it continues to help you. You seem like a diligent listener to Sister and Dr. Ava Muhammad's program. So, you know, may Allah always be with you and bless you. You know, you keep feeding your mind and things, and those are the things, man, make life worth living, man. I mean, I know they try to sell us on just having money and going to islands and sitting back chilling and things like that, but feeding ourselves on knowledge and wisdom. And growing and learning something every day, man. That's exciting. And if we talk more on what God revealed to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad every day, you'd be surprised what God would be depositing in us to share with each other. And our electric lights would be on every day. And it's hard for the cells of the body to be charged like that, and we be suffering from something. We have another caller, Sister Donna.
Yes, we have on the line Brother Hoyle from Memphis.
Brother, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Assalamu alaikum, Brother Rodney. Beautiful wisdom coming from you, brother. And I wanted to add to tell Brother Darryl that Dr. Ridgely had an article a couple of issues back saying that intermittent fasting and, well, just fasting and ivermectin and also the Pactimmune, that'll help. And, you know, we had a regimen from the Nation of Islam of vitamin D, vitamin C, black seed oil. It was a list of things that came from the
right.
Nation. So, you know, and then we, yeah, yes, sir. And if we follow those and fast, like I said, Master Rabbi Muhammad say, if you fast and eat once every other day or 3 days out of a month, you'll get rid of all sickness. So I believe, you know, they picked our people, Brother Student Minister Rodney, some of my family members when I was telling them about it a few weeks ago. Well, that's horse medicine. That's animal medicine. I said, no, it's not. I said, two countries was cured by ivermectin, India and Mexico. I said, they tell you that, you know, to trick you, this pharmaceutical death jab. But Brother Rodney, you made me go out and dust this book off the national agenda. I got it in my library. I saw it on the flyer, and you were talking about suicide. And I wanted to add to that, Brother Rodney.
Yes,
know,
sir.
You talked about which, and this is very important. You know, you said something very important, that most of the suicide among black women, you know, include their vulnerability to sex trafficking, mainly sex trafficking and severe and violent sexual assault and partner abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Further, Black girls are more likely to experience homelessness, separation from family and abandonment, neglect, and incarceration of parents. But I wanted to add to that, Student Minister Rodney, and I was listening to Sister Pamela's show Tuesday, and Brother Deshaun, Attorney Deshaun, and the attorneys were talking about it, and Sister Ava, we've talked about it on the show before here. And this is organ trafficking and the sex trafficking where they're kidnapping our girls and for organs and ovaries and stuff like that. Memphis is one of the, you know, Chicago, there's a lot of Black women missing in that area, but Memphis has a large population of Black women being you know, that's missing, teenagers, especially teenage girls. That's another thing to add along with, you know.
Yeah, can I
the
ask
food.
You? Can I ask you, where do you see the pictures of the missing, say, Black girls or girls of color? Or where do you normally, do you have a, like here, I was going to say,
it was in the news. It was
sometime
in the news,
in Walmart.
Yesterday.
You know,
yes, sir. It was
yeah,
in the news
like in
yesterday.
Walmart, you'll see a picture. Mm-hmm.
Right. It was three, I saw in our local news, three teenage girls missing yesterday in our local news. And,
wow.
Like every other day. And Brother Deshaun, Attorney Deshaun, was talking about the high number of Black girls missing. And then it was an article in the Final Call last week.
Right.
Talking, and Sister Charlene was talking about the missing Black girls. So there's a big epidemic of our women going missing. Like I said, not only sex trafficking, but I believe, and not only the women, some of our young men, too, of organ trafficking, because I worked
organ
with my cousin a long time with organ trafficking. Yes, sir. I'll give you some experience. Me and my cousin, I have a cousin live in Mississippi, so I was just doing, I didn't embalm my work, you know, like part-time work. His father-in-law owned a funeral home, so I just do, you know, a little driving here and there, and I saw how they would go, you know, on the weekends we pick up a body here and there, and I didn't do it. I quit because I couldn't muster it up, but one of the managers told me, he said, you know, when they come back from the autopsy place, a lot of their organs are missing. And I saw this for myself. This was like 80s and the 90s. And this was before, around the time I was coming around the nation. So I know for a fact. And this is without their family's consent. So, you know, now if you look up the price of each body part, you know, a kidney is like 50,000, and I think they say the highest highest part of the organ is the pineal gland, what they use for melatonin from our melanated people. So, and this is a big, you know, Detroit. You know, they caught a man in Detroit, a Jewish man, I think in Detroit or Chicago, that had missing body parts. So this is something that's secret that they've probably been doing for a long time, Brother Rodney. But In the news, you know, if you didn't know, we had a young brother, 18 years old, mayor of Earl, Arkansas, the youngest mayor. I was right up the street from Memphis, and he just graduated from high school, an 18-year-old Black brother who's a mayor. And I just wanted to bring that up because we're listening.
He's,
you know,
the mayor,
always,
he's the mayor now, right? He's the mayor now,
yes,
right?
Yes, sir. Earl, Arkansas.
I thought I saw something like that. I'm gonna look that up. What city? What city?
Earl, Arkansas.
In Arkansas.
Right up the street from there. Yes, sir.
But what?
And
you said in Arkansas. What?
Yeah, Earl, Arkansas.
Earl,
and,
Arkansas. Okay.
And
I'm gonna look that up. Yeah,
yes, sir.
I was gonna say too that you know, in Goodell's the Slave Code book, I think on page 305 it says that we were brought here, three things were to be done with our bodies. One, our bodies were used for hard labor. Number two, our bodies would be used for breeding. And number three, our bodies would be used to further medical science and things. So this taking of our organs and things has been a part of the slave code going way back. So I agree with you. I think this has been going on a long time. It's just now coming up for discussion. But I think they have been taking our organs and things for some time. I think organ transplant and the knowledge of that may have been a lot more recent than before, but definitely using our bodies to advance things. This has been a regular practice under this racist society.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
And one more point before I get off the phone. You know, this situation, and, you know, I thank Allah that they let our sister go, the basketball player. But this is the kicker, brother. You know, this is the white people are angry, and they're saying, this is from a white woman that said, a WNBA player who hates America for a Russian arms dealer. Meanwhile, U.S. Marine Paul Whelan is riding away in a Russian prison. Make that make sense. Now, the Biden administration makes me sick to my stomach, and I don't ever want to hear them talk about gun control ever. But you see how Allah is, you know, we were always taught when we came to the nation that it was going to be a civil war in America. And I was listening to the news, and the family of this Michael Whelan is, you know, and white people are really upset, you know. So,
well, I can see it. I was watching one of the news programs when the story broke that she was coming home, but they weren't bringing the Marine home, the Whelan family.
Right.
Even though his brother made a noble statement that the Biden administration did the right thing, I'm sure that there are groups here, there are white groups here in particular, they're going to try to take advantage of this. What you call an even fair swap in that they let a real notorious Russian go for what they may call a basketball player, but they're saying if you just deal with the fact that she's an American and that kind of thing first, even the Marine who's still over there, his brother said that they still did the right thing in bringing her home. And, of course, she has committed to working with that family and the other families who have gotten loved ones back in that. They're joining with that Whelan family to keep putting pressure to get that Marine person back. But there are going to be people who are trying to work this and put some salt in the wounds that have never really been repaired between white and black America. So I agree with you, you know, that we should pay attention to these things because that helps us to see the trend that's developing in the country,
you know,
making manifest something. So, but I thank you for bringing that point up.
Thank you, Brother Rodney. Beautiful show and beautiful,
sir.
You know, and a great job, sir. And I listened to you on you all are the only ones that bring up the lecture on Sunday. I say I listen to your lecture first, and I say you do an excellent job, sir. So may Allah continue to bless you with Mosque number 12 and great work you guys are doing. And inshallah, I'll be talking to you guys soon. As-salamu alaykum.
All right. Thank you. Walaikum salam. Thank you so much, sir. Thank you so much. Wow, that was something. An 18-year-old being the mayor there in Earl, Arkansas. Well, that's going to be something. I thought I saw something like that, and then I don't know. I guess I just wasn't even believing it, so it went in one ear and out the other one. So I'm glad he brought that to our attention, folks. This has been something to go through. This about suicide. You know, sometimes subjects aren't as grabbing as other subjects, and so some people might sit back or not participate, but I'm telling you, this is going to be talked about more and more about suicide and trying to. Sometimes we don't really bother with it until it hits our homes, and we say, "Why didn't I read the signs?" And I don't pretend to know what the signs are either. So I don't talk before you as somebody that's skilled and knowledgeable in the way of this. But when it comes to a quality of life that we're all trying to live, and many of us, we're just ordinary people in that sense of the word,
And we want to live, you know, a good life. We want a good life for our children. I find that most black folks, as Sister Ava used to eloquently say over the years, we, you know, really, we just want to be left alone. You know, we're not pressing white people. We don't need to be around you. We're not pressing to be next door to you. You know, if my sister were here, you know, I could hear her saying it. We really want separation. And, you know, we're not gonna even get to grow into the kind of people we need to be as long as we're among them. And they have any say of how civilization is gonna go. They have any say in how we're gonna be, you know, when somebody's called the colored man, they're skilled at coloring you. And they can color themselves, and they can send people in your house and color them to look like you and sound like you, and you don't even recognize that they're really not of you. When you need to go in that student enrollment and look at the colored man, you know, and how he's able to do, and the colored man is linked with a skunk, and that's the only creature I know of that his presence is not necessary for you to know that he's been there. If a skunk has been there, he doesn't have to be there for you to know that a skunk has been around, because there's something that he leaves that lets you know he's been there. So for the Honorable Elijah Muhammad to carefully use this word, and I remember the minister saying he was not trying to be derogatory toward white people. He was being descriptive, that they know how to do a work that they don't even have to be present in. You know, some of our writers used to say, the ghetto may be black, but there's a white presence there. Because we didn't design the so-called ghetto. You know, we just ended up there. a lot of things in life. So, but, you know, this is how we're trying to live. And I've heard it said slavery was horrible, but the one thing more horrible than slavery is adjusting to it. And so we can say that white racism is horrible. We can say that living in discrimination is horrible. We're still more segregated than we were in the 1950s when we tried to integrate and end segregated living. But they said in many of our institutions and spaces that we live in, we're still far more segregated in public schools. We're definitely far more segregated in our churches and our houses of worship. We're more segregated in many of the facilities that we use. And so, you know, with a little time left, I'm just sort of trying to wrap up on some of the things that you know, we're doing. But this is called the colored man. He can color something up to make it look, what color do you like? You know, in The Wizard of Oz, when they were trying to get there to find all the answers, for the Scarecrow didn't have a brain, the Tin Man didn't have a heart, Lion didn't have courage, Dorothy wanted to get home, and they get to Emerald City, and in Emerald City they change the color every day. And the man said, "Hey, I thought the horse was that color. How did he get that color?" He said, "I guess we say that's a horse of a different color." I mean, there were so many deep concepts in there that are operating, but the colored man, he can color society to look any way you want it. And the one way to keep a slave from ever trying to escape from slavery is convince him that he's not a slave. And once you can do that, then you take his mind, and his mind, as I think Frantz Fanon said it, that the greatest weapon in the mind of the oppressor is the mind of the oppressed. Once he can get us to think a certain way, ourselves a certain way and everything, that's his most potent weapon. Now, he's got other weapons. He's got spies. He's got people who can come in and disrupt, tear up your organizations, tear up your institutions and things.
He has brute force he can use, but his greatest weapon is us. When we're not in control of ourselves, his greatest weapon is a people who don't have a self-determined existence, and now they're living under a mental paradigm called learned helplessness. And if we don't have something, let's go down to Staples or Office Max, get us some placards, make us some signs, and let's go protest for somebody to give us what we don't have. But the last thing we're going to do is be self-determined and get up and get those things for ourselves. The last thing we're going to do is build those things for ourselves. You know, the last thing we're going to do is just set up our schools and teach our children ourselves. I mean, we've decided it's somebody else's duty, and I'm helpless. When COVID came and the schools said we have to close the schools down, I know here, I don't know if it was in all the other cities that may be listening, but here in the black community, the mothers were screaming out, how's my baby going to eat in the morning if school is closed down? And I didn't realize how many of us were relying, because I'm just not from that school. I mean, we didn't have much, but I ate some oatmeal or some grits or something before I went to school, and it was at home. Eating at school, aside from taking me some lunch money to eat in high school in the cafeteria, eating at school was unheard of. Getting to school early enough so I could eat breakfast at school was unheard of. So kind of got past me that's how we've been living for quite a few years now. And so we've got to do something, because the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense at one time, and they all were products of, you know, ultimately the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, but they called themselves listening to Malcolm X, but they thanked Mr. Muhammad for they did that 10-point program because they saw the back of our newspaper, Muhammad Speaks. So they were feeding children breakfast, because they saw that some of the poor children didn't have breakfast. I mean, Black Panther Party for Self-Defense had a lot to do with the Head Start program in the public school system. So it's just that I'm only bringing those points up to show when we have some sense of resilience and just exercise a little of our self-determined spirit, let me tell you, all kind of things start happening for us. So I'm saying to you, be blessed. And I think we only have a couple of minutes left, but, you know, my mind always goes back to my sister, student minister Ava Muhammad. And I thank Brother Darius Muhammad, who's the executive producer now of this programming. And, you know, we understand that we got a Savior's Day, a mighty Savior's Day coming up. Inshallah, you know, Elevated Places will be doing a show right there, if it be the will of Allah, in February. We're going to be at the Wind Trust Theater. We're going to be at McCormick Place for the weekend. I believe they're setting up for plenary sessions and everything. About 800 hotel rooms have been set aside so that, you know, you pretty much can be right in the same place almost the whole weekend. I think you have to travel just down the street to go to the Wind Trust to hear the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, who I understand has an earth-shaking message waiting on us. So, you know, don't you leave without getting the website Minister Ava Muhammad to talk about purchasing her books, the master classes, and any continued studies that she had set up for us. You can go to MinisterAva.com, MinisterAva.com, to get that kind of information of everything you need to know to get the books and materials from our dear sister. She has documented work that we'll be feeding on for years and years and years to come. I thank Allah for her. I thank Allah for this that we have. I thank Allah for
the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, his preaching the word alone has brought us all together. I never would have known her were he not preaching. I never would have known Brother Darius were he not preaching. And so I thank the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan ultimately for bringing those two people into my life. I'm more than honored to be a part of this programming and to keep Elevated Places going. And I pray to Allah that you keep yourself as a listener to this monumental programming that feeds the soul, not just provide information. And we thank Allah for that. Thank Deucer, Sister Donna, and all those that called in to be a part of the Elevated Places programming tonight. And all those brothers and sisters that agreed to join in, like I have, to be guest hosts for our programming, you know, and I pray Allah can come back again and we bring some interesting folks on to talk to us about many of the things that are going on. You know, I heard the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan correct us. We used to live for years saying that, you know, well, that'll be for another time. Hopefully I can share some of that wisdom with you when I come back. But we've got to go. God bless you all for being on Elevated Places tonight. Thank you again to our producer, Sister Donna, and our executive producer, Brother Darius Muhammad. God bless you all. As-salamu alaykum.